This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Chuan Tik. Budget 2016 is scheduled to be tabled in Parliament on October 23rd. How involved have you been in this process of allocating taxpayers' money? Well, according to a joint survey by the Open Budget Initiative and the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, otherwise known as IDEAS, not enough. Public participation has always been a challenge in the budget process. Sri Muniati from IDEAS, who is the lead researcher on this survey, joins me now in the studio to talk more about her findings. Sri, welcome.
Thank you.
So, how did Malaysia fare in this survey?
The results quite mixed. For transparency, Malaysia's performance, Malaysia's score is 46, and for public participation, it was 12, and for budget oversight by Parliament, it's only 15, and for audit oversight, 67. So it's mixed. The highest score so far is by oversight by the audit institution.
So let's go through them all one by one.
Sure.
46 out of 100 in terms of budget transparency, which is a slight improvement from the last survey. Mm-hmm. How does this compare to the regional average?
So far, I think Philippines is the highest with score, if I'm not mistaken, around 60. And then Indonesia. So we are still in limited positions, which means that the government only provide the public limited information. But that's a little bit improvement, 7-point improvement from last year, which is only 39. But this means that a lot of information, important information, for example, such as sensitivity analysis to economic situation or the information on liabilities, for example, are not available in our budget documents.
Where did we improve then from the previous survey?
Our improvement is mostly on the... I think I have to get back. So there are 8 key budget documents that the government can publish. The first one is a pre-budget statement, which is a document that outlines the strategies for a budget for the current year or for the current year or for the next 2 or 3 years. That one we didn't publish. And then the second one is executive budget proposal, which actually outlines the, of course, the proposed budget for the current year. Usually we do it in October here. We have at least 5 documents that actually can qualify as executive budget proposal. Anggaran perbelanjaan, anggaran hasil, economic report, supply bill, all of them are executive budget proposal. So that one, limited in terms of quality. The third one is enacted budget, which is basically the supply act and financial act. So that one, the quality was quite good. And then the so-called citizen budget, which is the simpler version of budget. Budget documents are quite complicated for non-specialists, right? So the government can publish another document that actually simpler for public to understand. It's called citizen budget. We don't publish that one. Yes, there is a website, I think separate website for the 2015 budget. The government has a website, but it does not explain in a simpler term the budget as a whole.
So a citizen budget would be a summary of what the...
It can be a summary. It can be, you know, all the complicated terms in budget explained in layman terms. And then the fifth document is in-year report, which actually provide update on the implementation of the budget. How much money has been used, whether the program budgeted has been implemented fully. So all this can be reported in-year report. We have that report. The title of the document is Economic Quarterly, but the quality of the document is not up to international standard. It doesn't function as an update to the current budget.
Who produced the annual review?
Ministry of Finance. And then the sixth document is Media Report. This one we don't produce. So 6 month update of the current, of the budget implementation. And then the seventh document is Year End Report, which is Penyata Keuangan, annual statement of the federal government financial situation statement. This one we have, again, limited quality. It has some reports on revenue, actually detailed report on revenue, but it does not have, again, enough information according to international standard. The last one is audit report. This one our score is improved. I think it's because first, since 2012, the government has tabled audit report 3 times a year. And then there's a process of course, public consultation, public review on the report. So that improved the score.
Would the purpose of the annual review overlap with the audit report? Because both are checking how the money are spent.
I think the annual review is only sort of reporting the statement of the financial expenditures of the previous year. Audit report actually audit that statement. So the audit report can actually publish later than the financial statement.
And coming back, one more thing on this is the citizens budget.
Mm-hmm.
Every time a national budget come out, mm-hmm. all the media, TV, newspaper will cover it and they'll list down the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not enough? That's an oversimplification of what a citizen budget will look like?
I think it's good. It's good that the media actually plays that role. But the government can actually do that as well. Because sometimes I think the media takes only from the budget speech. But the executive budget proposal is not only budget speech. We have thick document, which is Anggaran Perbelanjaan Kerajaan Persekutuan, actually outline the expenditure for the year. Not many people actually look into it when we listen to the budget speech. So if the government actually can give sort of overview of what in that 700 thick document in a more simpler term, that would be good.
What would we normally miss in those?
Say, for example, last year, expenditure for social welfare, for example, or for social sector. Last year, how much is last year? What is the current expenditure? And if we increase the expenditure, can the government explain why there's an increase? For economic expenditure, for example, why, if we say we do a economic stimulus or economic benefit stimulus program, what's the reasons for that kind of program to be financed by this current budget? This kind of information can be included in the citizen budget.
Along with the report comes a few suggestions on how we can improve our budget transparency, which
mm-hmm.
is to make all the 8 sets of documents that you have just listed
mm-hmm.
Available. Has the Malaysian government taken any of these suggestions over the years?
There are, last year, I think in 2012 survey, there's recommendation to improve the executive budget proposal. That recommendation has not been taken seriously, but there's some improvement in the Laporan Ketua Audit Negara, the Auditor General report, which is some probably come from the 2012 recommendation.
So that's where we have improved the most.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Budget oversight is split into 2 categories,
mm-hmm.
By legislature and by audit. So as mentioned just now, we did quite well in the audit department, scoring 67 out of 100, but very weak in the legislature oversight, which is only 15 over 100. What is the difference between budget oversight by legislatively and by audit?
Legislative oversight, I think, took place during the formulation process, when the budget being tabled, and then whether some expenditure can be reduced or increased, whether the strategy or the, you know, the strategy or the priority of the budget can be changed or not. The survey evaluates the capacity of the parliament to amend or to change the strategy, the amount of expenditure, basically the power to amend the budget. So far, according to the survey, the power to amend, our legislators' power to amend is quite limited. I understand that Malaysia has Westminster system, which, of course, it's different from presidential system like in the US, which the parliament has quite broad power to amend the budget. But even within the Westminster framework, we can actually improve the score.
So how can we improve that? Like more debates on the budget in the lead up to the announcement?
It can be that one. But also, I think another element is research capacity of the parliament of the parliamentarians. Yes, some individual parliamentarians have a very good research capacity, but most of them are not supported, say, for example, by research office in the parliament. Research office in the parliament, they don't really provide assistance to the parliament to do research on budget. There is a research office, I think, in the parliament, but they don't do that assistance for the parliamentarians. And that's very important. If you want to have a quality debate on budget, the parliamentarian has to be supported by a strong research office in the parliament itself. Mm-hmm. So that one thing. Another one, I think, is supplementary budget. I think over time, our government has been, tabling supplementary budget for quite often within the last few years. I think 2 times a year. it seems that the power of the parliament to even reject the supplementary budget is not there. So the money is being spent, okay, table the supplementary supply bill, and they just approve it. There seems to be a weak check and balance system in place.
How many votes is required to reject a supplementary budget, for example? Is it a simple majority?
I think so, yeah. It should be simple majority. And okay. It's very difficult. I think we had ideas, had launched this result last week. And I asked one of the, actually, Tony Pua. So is it possible that we block, say, for example, if the performance of the last budget, if the parliamentarian were not happy with the performance of the last budget, can they actually block or reject the current budget? Yes, we can, he said. But whether we have enough votes for that. Right. So, yeah. So it's a little bit difficult.
How do you measure, like, for this score on legislative oversight, for example, how do you measure the effectiveness of its oversight? Like, do you measure it quantitatively or qualitatively? Is there, like, a specific number of debates required for the budget, for example?
One of them is research capacity. The other one is, I think I mentioned about their power to amend the budget. And there's also the power to whether the legislations, whether it's act or any legislations in the country, require the parliament to approve the shifting of the fund from, you know, one ministry to another, or from sub-ministry or department to another department. So that, so it's not quantitative, it's qualitative. We look into laws and regulations that actually regulate the way financial, for example, we look into Financial Procedures Act, we look into constitutions, to what extent that actually they give enough power to parliament to oversee the budget. But another thing also, this we also measure the participation of the public during parliamentary session. So that one can be part of the parliamentary oversight as well.
Right. We'll come back and talk more about how the public can participate more effectively in the budget process. I'm speaking today to Sri Munyati from the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. We're talking about the Open Budget Initiative today. Up next, we'll talk about public participation, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Chua Entik. If you've just joined us, I'm speaking today to Sri Munyati from the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. Sri is the manager of the Political Economy and Governance Unit there. She recently led research into the Open Budget Initiative survey in Malaysia, which we did slightly okay. It's an improvement over the 2012 survey, scoring 46 out of 100, which is not too bad, but not too good either. One of the things that we didn't do too good is getting the public to participate more aggressively or more effectively in the budget process. When we left off talking about how the parliamentarians can do more, What can the public do more? Is it a case of the public being apathetic, or is there not enough channels for them to participate in the process?
When we talk about participations in this survey, there are three types of participation that we actually measured. The first one is participation by the executive, by Minister of Finance or other ministries who actually involved in the budgeting process. The second one, participations by legislative. And the third is participation by audit institution. So I've been asked questions like, the government has been doing consultative, you know, consultation process. There's a budget consultation, big budget consultation forum. Why we don't, you know, score well? Is that because we have quite number of forums or number of avenues for public to actually influence the budget formulation process, but almost none avenues for public to actually influence or give feedback or input into public participations by legislative and also by audit institutions. Even in the formulation process or public participation by the executive, we can improve the way public consultation is being done by the Ministry of Finance.
So the score for public participation is 12 out of 100, which if you compare to the average of 46 is one reason why it dragged down. So as you mentioned, there's a lot of consultation, but for the average man on the street, for example, and they want to voice their concerns, What channels do they have?
I think right now, actually, there are some. I mean, they can use, of course, social media. They can use other things as well. But when we talk about public participation, it's not only about collecting inputs, but also giving feedback, right? And then what kind of inputs that you want, that the government wants. So far, it's just, okay, give us memorandums, send us what you want. So no specific, right? In Korea, for example, they have a almost six days public consultation forum. And for each forum, they have certain topics that they want to achieve from that consultation. For example, how do we improve childcare facilities? How do we improve the benefits of expenditure in, say, for example, preschool activities or things like that? So it's very specific public consultations. Here is more a big, you know, or there's some focus group discussions, but the objective, the topic, the objective that they want to achieve from this consultation is not very clear. So that's one of the things. So it's not only about collecting input, but also what kind of input that the government wants from the public. Second is feedback. So yes, you're collecting input, but do you take our inputs, or are you just collecting it or collecting them? So it's important for the government to give feedback. Look, thank you for your input, but here is our priority based on the input and also based on our calculations of economic situation and our resources. This is the input that we think that, you know, we can take. So there are those processes that, so feedback are required or encouraged by this survey to be given by the government if they want to score well in public participation.
If too much emphasis is given to the concerns of the public, for example, mm-hmm. is there a danger that much of the budget would be geared towards short-term concern? Because two of the things I can think of off the top of my head that we get a lot of feedback from social media or even through the media, that it is petrol subsidies,
yes,
and BRIM. So those we hear a lot of people talking, complaining. How should the government balance it? And is there a danger that their concerns would be steered towards short-termism policies?
It's true. I think public participation is important. Even in Korea, for example, the country who actually score really, really well in public participations, they limit the topics of, you know, the topic of conversations. Most of the topic that they bring to the public is actually on social welfare. So they want to know, given the limited resources that they have, here what we want to do, what do you think? Or what do you think? Can you give us some suggestion on how to improve the current policies, given that we will not increase this expenditure next year? So I think when we do public consultation, again, I think the emphasis should be more on not asking the question, what do you want? But educate also the public, hey, our resources are limited. We only have this 100 billion this year. And actually, only 10% we will only allocate for example, social sector. Which sector do you think we should, you know, get, you know, more priority in this year? So not only asking, what do you want?
Yeah.
That's very important. And otherwise, I think the problem with budget is a political, you know, statement. Sometimes it's a political statement, and sometimes it's being used as, of course, as a way to show how benevolent a government is. And that's the downside of public participation. But public participation is also a powerful tool to educate public that public resources or government resources is limited. And that's why we have to be wise in using it.
Looking at the Open Budget Initiative website, they were also saying how a more transparent budget can lead to very tangible change in reducing poverty and climate change, for example. I'm just wondering if you can elaborate on that. How does the budget lead to a reduction in poverty or climate change?
Well, let's take poverty. How can an efficient or an open budget can actually lead to eradication of poverty? First, I think if the public knows how much money is being used for poverty eradication, for example, and know actually what kind of program that the government do to eradicate poverty, then we will know better on whether we can evaluate on whether these expenditures or this program are effective enough to eradicate poverty. Right now, There's one question actually in the survey that required us researcher to answer is, can you find is there any information about allocation for certain marginal groups or by programs or by type of expenditure? But we couldn't find it. Yes, there are programs in different ministries that cater to marginal groups, you know, or to for low-income groups. There are, but we cannot have a sort of overview or an accumulative number across ministries that this is for poverty, for example. It's very difficult. So how do we know that poverty eradication program has enough, you know, allocations, or probably has enough allocations? So if we know, you know, how much is allocated for poverty eradications, and we know the needs on the ground, then we can compare it. Then, you know, we can actually give better input to the government on how to eradicate poverty more effectively.
A lot of emphasis has been placed in recent years on the bottom 40% as well, isn't it? And I guess a lack of specifics is holding back the debate.
Say for example, right now the government say, yes, we will reduce income tax for certain income group, for example. Or there are subsidy for childcare for certain income group. But we don't know across ministries how much is actually allocated for, you know, bottom 40%, for example. And if we can actually list down those programs. Right now, the problem with the Anggaran Perbelanjaan Persekutuan is it's not machine-readable document. It's in PDF. So sometimes it's searchable. Sometimes it's very difficult to search. So if this document is presented or available for public in machine-readable format, say in Excel, then we can do, you know, simple calculations, stick here from there. For now, it's very difficult to calculate.
Right. Can an organization like IDEAS, for example, fill in the gap by producing, you know, an aggregate of how much is being spent on poverty programs?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I think that's the beauty of open data. The problem is a lot of organizations actually can do that. But also, it should be provided by the government by providing what I call this machine-readable data. It's taxing and require a lot of resources just to, you know, to extract numbers from this thick, it's 700 pages document. It's only aggregate number, not aggregate, but only number sub-department, allocation for sub-department. So we don't really find a very specific expenditure on certain program except for development program. So first, the format of the data need to be improved. The second, more detail. I think it should be also given to public.
So our national budget will be tabled next month. Is it too late now for anybody to influence the outcome?
I don't think it's too late. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Prime Minister has this Facebook page or Twitter handle or something, but through social media. I think right now the budget, if I'm not mistaken, is actually in the cabinet level, you know, to be ready to be approved and if they're happy. So I think there's still some room, but it's going to be difficult to change the. I think because the budget process starts from January last year, and so ideally all the input should come even from the very beginning, from January through August. So September, it's not too late, but I don't think any input will change the mind of the government on how the budget is going to be spent next year.
So that's how early it starts. So the process for budget 2017 has already started this year in January.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah.
What is your takeaway from this result?
I think first, public participation. It's two sides of a coin. Yes, we want the government to provide us more space, but I think another coin is that we want to, as a citizen, we want to provide the government a good input as well. So, and a good input based on, you know, I think right now, IDEAS is working on open data, project as well. One of the problem pointed out by international survey in Malaysia on open data is not only that the government, they don't provide enough data, but also the demand from the public on the data itself is very limited, is low. So in order for the government to provide more space to publish more data, I think the demand from real demand from the public should be you know, should exist as well. Say for example, as you said, more organization should process the data that actually available right now and make use of it. And if they make use of it and they know the limitations of the current data, they can ask for more. And that will create sort of, that will push the government to also think about releasing more data.
Sri Munati, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Sri Munati from the Political Economy and Governance Unit at IDEAS. We've been talking about the Open Budget Initiative, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.